I'm Kenneth C. Hamrick, H-A-M-R-I-C-K, at the Thurmont, T-H-U-R-M-O-N-T, Thurmont United Methodist Church in Thurmont, Maryland. My mailing address is 105 Laurel Avenue, Thurmont, Maryland, 21788. I would like to just share about Eilers, E-Y, L-E-R, apostrophe S, Eilers Valley Chapel. 60 miles north of Washington, D.C., and 60 miles west of Baltimore, Maryland, is a church that died and God revived. Eilers Valley Chapel, a one-room stone structure on a dirt road, was built in 1857 as United Brethren Church. Obviously, Confederate soldiers marched by that chapel on the way to Gettysburg, about 20 miles north. In 1944, because of the involvement in World War II and because people were moving out of the mountains into the cities and suburbs to find employment, the Eilers Valley Chapel closed its doors. For 25 years, it sat there, except for an annual homecoming. When I was assigned to the Thurmont United Methodist Church in June of 1969, in my second week there, I found out about the chapel from, ironically enough, an Eiler. And he told me about this little church nestled in the mountains that had been abandoned. And so when my fourth son was born, my mother and I took the other three sons, and we went up to find the church, expecting to see something in shambles. I was very surprised to see such a quaint little church, nothing around but God's creation. And so I made a deal with the Lord. I said, God, give me six people on Sunday for worship and 10 or 12 Sunday night, and I will volunteer my time. Well, since then, we average about 80 to 90 on Sunday nights. There is no membership. There is no electricity. We have 70 candles. We have two gas heaters on the back wall. We use a treadle organ. There is no membership. We tell the people to leave their denomination outside, that we're not impressed and God's depressed. And so we run the whole gamut. We run from the Methodist that I am to a Lutheran who was our treasurer for 17 years. And finally, he, because of advanced years, gave it up and Episcopalian took it over. A Moravian has been our organist. A Catholic takes care of the inside of the chapel. 10 years ago, on a Sunday night in the summertime, two middle-aged women came out, introduced themselves as Peggy and Sharon from Baltimore, Maryland. And I thanked them for coming, and they came out the next Sunday night, and I said, "Now, you two are sisters. Are you blood sisters or Roman Catholic sisters?" And she said, "Roman Catholic." And they continued coming the entire summer, every night. Tremendous faith, tremendous joy and spirit about them. They then were transferred out of the diocese, and I lost contact with them. This past spring, I received a letter from one of them, and she said, "We have a night off. We're now near Lancaster. Do you still have services?" And I said, "Yes." And I said, "As a matter of fact, we have a picnic coming up at 5:30, so why don't you come and be our guest?" Which they did. And they told me that in the 10 years that they had been absent from the chapel, they had never found another church to worship in that gave the same filling. We have now gained such popularity that at Christmas time we have what is called, used to be a week of Christmas, and then it got beyond 7 nights, and so we just call it Christmas at Eilers Valley Chapel. I'll have 10 nights of services with 17 services. They become multiple as we get closer to Christmas Eve, 4 on Christmas Eve itself. Being in close proximity to some large areas, including Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Greencastle, Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, Cumberland, Maryland, we will have well over 2,000 people to worship if the weather holds up. We have no power struggles because there are no meetings. There's nothing for anyone to get upset with. If you don't like what we say and preach, you just simply don't come back. So it's more harmony in that church than probably any church. There is almost no need for money. I sometimes will tell people, slow up in your giving. You're giving too much. And so all money, with the exception of a little, which is used for gas, bulletins and supplies, insurance, and candles, the rest is given away for missions. And so we just have a joyful time in serving the Lord and praising Him. And I would strongly encourage any minister to find a little abandoned church and on Sunday nights to open an undenominational, free-flowing service and watch the blessings come. Grew up in a Methodist church. My grandfather had been a Methodist minister, but died when I was two, so I never really knew him. Very active in the church. Church was our life. And I went to a large church in Washington, D.C. And when I was 16 years of age, I became ill. My glands started to swell, and I became extremely tired. And My physician, I think I mentioned next door neighbor, said, I want to put you in the hospital for a day for testing. So I was in the hospital not for one day, but for 1 week. And for 3 days, they didn't give me anything to counteract my illness because they were testing me. They did not want anything in my body other than what they were looking for. And I remembered very suddenly on the third day, and of course that's one of the good Jewish numbers. In fact, the most sacred of all the Jewish numbers, less seven maybe would be. On the third day, I suddenly felt good. Before then, I got so bad that I could not swallow hardly. It just hurt so much. But the third day, suddenly I felt good. And three doctors came in, my physician, an internist, and a blood specialist. One came in the morning, one in the afternoon, one at night. All three of them walked over to my bed on these separate occasions, did not touch me, did not do anything except to ask me one question. They all said, how do you feel? And to each one I said, fine. And each one said, you shouldn't, and walked away. And after this happened a third time, I thought, what is this? You know. But I still remained in the hospital another 4 days. While I was there, I was 16, and I met this nurse, Betty, who was 19, a student nurse, and I was warned by my roommate, who was an older man, to watch out because she was a religious fanatic. It turned out to be she was a Baptist, and as far as he was concerned, she was a religious fanatic. So I became infatuated with Betty, and when I got home, I started calling her at the nurse's headquarters there, nurse's residence, and she said, are you a Christian? I said, of course I am. I'm a Methodist. And she said, no, that's not what I mean. Have you accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? And I didn't know what she was talking about. I had never heard that expression in my D.C. church. I was just dumbfounded. And after several more conversations with her over the next several weeks on the phone, I was converted and became a Christian. By that time, she was now pinned to the guy. As I remember back in those days, you were pinned and, or you know, it was going steady. She, I guess, was going steady at that time. And then she became pinned and then engaged, you know. So I thought, hey, back off. Who are you? You're 16. She's 19. She's getting on with her life with this other guy. And so I didn't call her anymore. That's back in the days when the high schools could actually not only have a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and have prayer in the school, but you actually could have Bible studies. And my D.C. high school, which was located right in Georgetown, had a very active and very large Bible study. In March of the following year, after I'd been converted in September the year before, we went to a girl's home for a potluck. 30 or so of us. After which, then, we went across D.C. all the way down to about 9th and E Street down there someplace to a Baptist church where there was going to be a Roy Rogers film. So we walked into this church as a group, and we could see that there wasn't enough room downstairs for all of us to sit as a group. So somebody got the bright idea, well, let's go up to the balcony. And there were steps on both sides of the balcony, and we could not see up. So we started single file up, and I was the last one to start up. And I just had my foot on the bottom step, and the word came down, it's full. Now, normally, if you are at the bottom and the word says it's full, you don't keep on going up. But like a bunch of sheep, we kept going up the steps. And as we made the turn to come across the other side, we could look. And yes, every seat, the theater seat up there, tiered, every seat was taken except the last seat of the last row was empty. And next to that seat was Betty. And I looked at her, and she looked at me, and our mouths dropped open. So as everybody walked across the balcony to go on down, I walked up the steps to see if the seat was taken. And she said, no. I said, may I sit here? And she said, yes. Watch the Roy Rogers film. Afterwards, I said to her, how did you get here? And she said, I came with a couple of other nurses by streetcar. I said, do you mind if I walk you back home? Now, we're talking about 10 o'clock at night, about 25 degrees outside, about a 20-mile-an-hour wind blowing, going through about 2 miles of the roughest section of D.C. And she said, fine. And so we start walking. I forgot to tell anybody I was going to do this, and they were looking for me. And so we were walking in front of the Supreme Court on North Capitol Street. And I said to her, Betty, when you saw me, it looked like you had seen a ghost. And she said, I thought I had. I said, what are you talking about? And she said, what did the doctors tell you that you had? And I said, suspected mononucleosis. She said, you had Hodgkin's disease. And she said, you were not expected to live. They gave you 6 months to live. They sent you home to die. And here I was standing in front of the Supreme Court, and I came to a complete stop. And I thought, God has ruled in my favor. I mean, he ruled when I wasn't even a Christian, because I wasn't a Christian back then. And I thought, and maybe even said audibly, I'm not sure. But I said, God, I don't know why you saved me, but you get me out of high school and into college and out of college and into seminary and out of seminary, and I'll be a minister. He did. And I got my education. All in D.C., and I became a minister. But I realized the tremendous power of God and the tremendous calling. I mean, I can pinpoint the very day, hour that God called me into the ministry. So that has affected my entire ministry, and I praise God for it.